A man runs, pushes through thin bark and leaf walls, through the purposeless rooms of rootwood. The trees crowd him. This far in the forest, there are aboriginal noises. The canopy rocks. The man is heavy burdened and sweated by the unseen sun. He is trying to follow a trail. Just before dark, he found his place. Dim, hotchy paths led him to a basin ringed by roots and stone-packed soil. Trees gave out. The earth was tramped down and stained with scorching and blood. The man spread out his pack and blanket, a few books and clothes. He laid down something well-wrapped and heavy among loam and centipedes. Rootwood was cold. The man built a fire, and with it so close the darkness shut him quite out, but he stared into it as if he might see something emergent. Things came close. There were constant bits of sound, like the bronchial call of a night bird, or the breath and shucking of some unseen predator. The man was wary. He had pistol and rifle, and one at least was always in his hand. By flame light he saw hours pass. Sleep took him and led him away again in little gusts. Each time he woke he breathed as if coming out of water. He was stricken. Sadness and anger went across his face. "I'll come find you," he said. He did not notice the moment of dawn, only that time skidded again, and he could see the edges of the clearing. He moved like he was made of twigs, as if he had stored up the night's damp cold. Chewing on dry meat, he listened to the forest's shuffling and paced the dirt depression. When finally he heard voices, he flattened against the bank and looked out between the trunks. Three people approached on the paths of leaf mold and forest debris. The man watched them, his rifle steadied. When they trudged into thicker shanks of light, he saw them clearly and let his rifle fall.
"Here!"
he shouted. They dropped foolishly and looked for him. He raised his hand above the earth rise. They were a woman and two men, dressed in clothes more ill-suited to rootwood than his own. They stood before him in the arena and smiled.
"Cutter!"
They gripped arms and slapped his back.
"I heard you for yards. What if you was followed? Who else is coming?"
They did not know.
"We got your message,"
the smaller man said. He spoke fast and looked about him.
"I went and seen. We were arguing.
The others were saying, you know, we should stay. You know what they said."
"Yeah, Dre. Said I'm mad."
"Not you."
They did not look at him. The woman sat, her skirt filling with air. She was breathing fast with anxiety. She bit her nails.
"Thank you for coming."
They nodded or shook Cutter's gratitude off. It sounded strange to him, and he was sure to them too. He tried not to make it sound like his sardonic norm. "It means a lot." They waited in the sunken ground, scratched motifs in the earth or carved figures from dead wood. There was too much to say.
"So, they told you not to come?"
The woman, Elsie, told him no, not so much, not in those words, but the Corkers had been dismissive of Cutter's call. She looked up at him and down quickly as she spoke. He nodded and did not criticize.
"Are you sure about this?"
he said, and would not accept their desultory nods.
"God damn it, are you sure? Turn your back on the Corkers? You ready to do that? For him?"
"It's a long way we've got to go."
"We already come miles in rootwood,"
said Pomeroy.
"There's hundreds more. Hundreds. It'll be busted hard. A long time. I can't swear we'll come back. I can't swear we'll come back."
Pomeroy said,
"Only tell me again your message was true. Tell me again he's gone and where he's gone and what for. Tell me that's true."
The big man glowered and waited, and at Cutter's brief nod, and closed eyes, he said,
"Well then."
Others arrived then, first another woman, Ihona, and then, as they welcomed her, they heard stick litter being destroyed in heavy leaps, and a Vodjanoi came through the brush. He squatted in the froggish way of his race and raised webbed hands. When he jumped from the bank, his body, head and trunk, all one fat sack, rippled with impact. Fedja Krillin was besmirched and tired, his motion ill-suited to woodland. They were anxious, not knowing how long they should wait, if any others would come. Cutter kept asking how they had heard his message. He made them unhappy. They did not want to consider their decision to join him. They knew there were many who would think it a betrayal.